Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archeries Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, John Kenneth Galbraith's. The Affluent Society is a landmark work of economic and social criticism that examines what happens when a nation becomes rich, yet continues to think and govern as if scarcity were its permanent condition. First published in the late 1950s, the book challenged the prevailing faith that expanding production and consumption automatically improves well-being. Galbraith argues that modern capitalism excels at supplying private goods, while public services and shared environments often remain neglected, leaving societies materially abundant but institutionally and socially imbalanced. He draws attention to the power of advertising and corporate influence in shaping consumer wants, and he questions whether measured economic growth reliably reflects genuine progress. Blending economics, public policy, and cultural observation, the book invites readers to reconsider common assumptions about prosperity, priorities, and the role of government. Its core ideas remain influential in debates about inequality, infrastructure, education, and how to define a good life in advanced economies. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, affluence and the end of the scarcity mindset. A central theme is the mismatch between a society's material capacity and its inherited habits of thought. Galbraith contends that economic policy and public ideology often remain anchored in a scarcity era, where the overriding goal was to increase output just to meet basic needs. In an affluent economy, however, the problem shifts. Production can satisfy many private wants, yet institutions continue to treat growth as an unquestioned good rather than one objective among many. This creates blind spots. Governments may underinvest in public goods, regulators may defer too easily to private industry, and citizens may equate higher consumption with higher welfare. Galbraith pushes readers to ask what prosperity is for, and whether the marginal benefits of ever more private goods exceed the benefits of better schools, safer streets, cleaner air, resilient infrastructure, and cultural amenities. The argument is not anti-prosperity, but pro-recalibration. He suggests that once basic needs are met, societies should consciously choose priorities instead of letting production targets and market momentum decide by default. This reframing lays groundwork for evaluating policy by social outcomes rather than output alone. Secondly, the dependence effect and the shaping of consumer wants. Galbraith is known for arguing that many consumer desires in modern capitalism are not purely spontaneous, but are cultivated by the very system that profits from satisfying them. This dependence effect describes how advertising, branding, and corporate persuasion can create or intensify wants, then present their fulfillment as evidence of progress. In that setting, the link between consumer choice and genuine welfare becomes less straightforward. If preferences are heavily influenced, the market signal that more consumption equals more well-being may be distorted. Galbraith does not claim people have no agency, but he challenges the assumption that all demand reflects independent, pre-existing needs. He invites readers to consider how competition in mature industries shifts from meeting necessities to stimulating additional purchases, replacement cycles, and status-driven consumption. This helps explain why private abundance can coexist with anxiety, dissatisfaction, or a sense of constant insufficiency. The dependence effect also has policy implications. If private demand is manufactured while public needs lack comparable promotional machinery, budget priorities and political attention may tilt toward what is marketed rather than what is socially essential. The topic encourages a more critical view of consumer culture and the metrics used to judge economic success. Thirdly, private wealth and public poverty. One of the book's most enduring ideas is the contrast between flourishing private consumption and underprovided public services. Galbraith argues that affluent societies often exhibit private wealth alongside public poverty, meaning that citizens can enjoy impressive personal goods while shared systems deteriorate. He points to the ways roads, parks, schools, public health, safety, and urban environments can lag behind national income. This imbalance is not merely aesthetic, it shapes opportunity, productivity, and social cohesion. When public goods are weak, the costs reappear as congestion, crime, poor educational outcomes, health disparities, and environmental damage. The result can be an economy that looks successful on paper, yet delivers a diminished day-to-day experience for many. Galbraith emphasizes that markets are structurally better at providing private goods with clear prices than public goods whose benefits are diffuse and long-term. Without intentional collective action, public investment becomes politically vulnerable, especially when tax resistance grows in a culture that celebrates private consumption. The analysis pushes readers to see infrastructure and services as forms of wealth, not expenses to be minimized. It also clarifies why debates about budgets are really debates about what kind of society affluence should build. Fourthly, reconsidering economic measurement and social priorities, Galbraith challenges the tendency to treat aggregate output as the primary indicator of progress. When an economy is affluent, the composition of production and the distribution of benefits matter as much as the total. He encourages scrutiny of what is being produced, for whom, and at what social cost. This leads to a critique of simplistic growth worship and of measures that count spending without distinguishing between welfare-enhancing activity and expenditures that respond to harm. If pollution requires cleanup spending or accidents require medical treatment, output rises even though the underlying condition is undesirable. Galbraith's perspective supports a broader evaluative framework that includes public amenities, leisure, security, health, and environmental quality. It also underscores the importance of political choice. Societies can decide to redirect resources toward education, research, housing, and civic life, rather than assuming that market allocations automatically reflect collective welfare. The theme connects economics to ethics and governance by arguing that an affluent society must set conscious priorities. It invites readers to question whether their own assumptions about success are inherited from a scarcity era and whether national policy debates should elevate quality of life alongside production statistics. Lastly, the case for active government and social balance. From Galbraith's viewpoint, the affluent economy requires a stronger, not weaker, public role to correct imbalances that markets alone do not address. He argues that deliberate public investment is needed to prevent public poverty and to ensure that the gains from productivity translate into broadly shared well-being. This includes funding schools and universities, maintaining infrastructure, supporting public health, and protecting environmental resources. The point is not simply bigger government, but appropriate government, capable of planning and financing goods that private enterprise undersupplies. Galbraith also highlights how corporate power and persuasive marketing can influence politics and shape what is seen as normal or necessary, making it harder for public priorities to compete. He therefore frames policy as a contest of institutions and incentives, not just a technical exercise in budgeting. In advocating for social balance, he implies that affluence creates the fiscal capacity to improve public life, but political will must be built to use it. Readers come away with a way to think about taxation and spending as tools for collective investment rather than mere redistribution. The theme remains relevant to contemporary debates about infrastructure, inequality, climate resilience, and the social foundations of a stable economy. In conclusion, this book fits readers who want to understand how economic prosperity can coexist with fraying public systems and a restless consumer culture. Students of economics, public policy, sociology, and political economy will find it valuable, as will general readers who are skeptical of the idea that more spending automatically means a better life. The main benefit is conceptual. It provides language and frameworks to evaluate prosperity in terms of priorities, institutions, and lived experience rather than only in terms of output. It can sharpen how you interpret debates about taxes, infrastructure, education, and environmental policy by showing that private consumption is only one part of social wealth. The Affluent Society is also worth buying compared to many modern titles because it is both foundational and accessible. Instead of offering short-term tactics or trend-driven commentary, it presents a durable critique of the growth and consumption narrative that still shapes politics and media. Many contemporary books revisit similar themes, but Galbraith's analysis stands out for its clarity about the public goods problem and for connecting marketing, corporate power, and policy choices into one coherent picture. Even when readers disagree, the arguments force a more serious conversation about what affluence should achieve. If you would like to support John Kenneth Galbraith, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.